Okay, we're in part 8, the end of Menshing. So Rachman is appealing Master Rashi L'Chai Olam Abba. So Chafetz Chaim is known that he used to give Sichas Musa in the yeshiva, and every now and then he would give a clap on the bima and say a televort. So once he says did so, and he mentioned to the Bachram that he remembers that a number of years ago he went to Kiev, and he went to the house of the big veer. His name was Brodetsky, a very wealthy man, Kiev, and he wanted to get a donation from him or whatever. So he said he went to the house, and he said he was like couldn't believe. I never saw such a house before. It's a huge, like a huge mansion, and yeah, like a castle. And when you walk in, he says there's this hallway, like empty, just like an ante room or whatever. And then you go into the main room. The main room was like filled with chandeliers and marble and gold. And it's unbelievable. Anyways, he was going on, Chafetz Chaim was describing the wealth and the beauty of this room, that the main room there, whatever. But, and then he says, years later, I went back there again, and I noticed that what happened, very strange. I go into the, hall, the ante room, like the hall, and all of a sudden, all the furniture, all the rugs and the thing, everything is in the hallway. So I asked him, what happened? So he says, the government came, the revolution happened, whatever, the government came, and they took over my mansion, and they kicked me out, and this gave me the hallway to live in. So I have to put everything in the hallway. So the Chafetz Chaim says, so he learned a lesson in Musa. He says, what do we see from here? He says, when the hallway is empty, that's a sign that the main room is full. He says, when the hall is full, it means the main room is empty. So this world's a prozdor lo'olam haba. Okay. He was at a chasna, and he said to everybody at the chasna, he says, I am greater than the Agon Hadir Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. I'm greater than him. So he says, what, you're greater than Chaim? How can you say such a thing? He says, I'll prove it to you. He says, what? He says, about a year and a quarter ago, he says, I went to a siyum, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky made a siyum in Shas Bavli in Yerushalayim. So after the siyum, I said to him, I made a l'chaim. So I told him, I made a l'chaim, and I gave him a bracha, that he should be zoicha to mesayim again next year. So Rav Chaim answered, and he said, v'chein lamar, says, you too, give me the, return the bracha. So what happened? Within a year, he made another siyum. Says, I didn't. When we see, my bracha is greater than his. My bracha means chaim, his bracha wasn't. He says there's only one difference. He said he learned and I didn't. He said that. But okay.
But that means that the kayach of his bracha is greater in the Rav Chaim's.
Right. Tongue in cheek, of course.
What's
tongue in cheek? Explain it to you later. Okay. Anyways, says he say also in the end of benching, Dor she Hashem lo yachzru chotov. So the Bali Musar say the medayik that. Those that are Dorish Hashem, it doesn't say they have everything. It says Yesh Lem Akol. It says Lo Yachzru Chotov. It means they're not missing anything. It doesn't mean they have it, but they're happy, right? Happy with what they have. So there's a story from a sefer called Ben Hamelech VaNazir, that there was once a king, and he had, I don't know, his birthday, whatever it was, and he decided that he's going to, anybody that has a request, he's going to give him his request. So people are lining up, whatever. So the king looked down at the people, and he saw one guy, was like, not with everybody, he was like by himself, So he was wondering, well, what is that? So he's like, bring this guy up. So they brought him up, and the king asked him, how come you're not standing with everybody else? Why are you alone over there? He says, well, I'll tell you why, because I'm a leper, I have leprosy. And he can't be with everybody. Huh? So he said, so he says, okay, so I'm giving requests. What would you like? So he says, what would I like? He thinks for a minute, he goes, I'll tell you what I would like. You see, my body's full of boils and things, whatever, and it's very irritable. I have to scratch myself. And every time I scratch myself, though, it reopens the boils, and it's a terrible thing, but at least when I scratch myself, it gives myself some relief. So he says, you know, I can scratch my arms, my legs, whatever, but my back, I can't scratch my back, I can't reach my back, you know. And I would just love to, you know, get that geschmack of scratching my back, but I can't. So if the king would, you know, give him, I can, you know, buy me a back scratcher, like, you know, metal thing with, you know, go, I can go down my back and scratch my back. It would be geschmack, you know, if you can. So the king said, you're an idiot. He says, I'm the king. I can afford it. I can do anything. Why didn't you ask me for a doctor to cure you of your disease instead of asking? So he said, cure my disease. He said, what am I going to do? At least when I have the thing, so fine. So then it's irritable, but then I scratch. I get the geschmack of scratching. He said, if I'm going to be cured, nothing's going to bother me, nothing to scratch. And, so what's my life worth? It's, well, at least I can scratch. Okay, it gets worse, but I get the geschmack of scratching. You're going to cure me. I'm not going to have that geschmack. So he says it's the same thing. He says that people are, you know, they say the mishiyeshlo me'ara to many times. He said, okay, so instead, just be happy with what you have. Instead of, well, more and more and more, is it better just to be happy and you don't have to constantly have this desire to, I want more, I need more, I need more. Just be happy with what you have. No, people will answer you the same shtus. They'll say, I'm happy with what I have. And what's life worth? You know, it's at least, oh, get this, okay, oh, now I want more. Okay, but then get this, I'm happy for a day. You know, you say, happy and unhappy. Happy, unhappy. At least I have something to do. Otherwise, I'm like, I've nothing to do. What's going to be like? It's going to be boring. Just so it's same stuff. Okay. Now we're going on to the hollow part of the Seder. So we say in the hollow, Lama Yomaru Goyim Ayena Elokeihem. Why should the Goyim say, where's your God? Elokeinu Bashamayim Kol Shechafetzas. So he says, there's a story, there's a woman, an older woman, that she went to the house of Rav Chaim Voloshin. And she told Rav Chaim the following story. She says that I live in a town outside of, a small town outside of Voloshin. And about 50 years ago, the Gon Shai Gesarie, he was very strong in his community, and he didn't give in to the rich people, and they made his life miserable, and they kicked him out of his post, and he had to leave his town. So he was like wandering out. It was Erev Shabbos, they kicked him out, and he came to our little thing, our town. So I hosted him in my home, and he asked me, I said, can I help, give you anything, what can I do for you? So he says, listen, you know, it's for Shabbos. He says, listen, I don't rely on the sheet of the Bach that in Chusars you can eat Chadash, whatever. And so I bring my own flour with me. And I will, so if you would do me a big favor, I really appreciate it if you can take the flour and make for me like three buns or whatever that I can have for Shabbos. So, you know, bake them for me. So she said, you know, besimcha, no problem, you know. So she did so. So on Motzi Shabbos, he thanked her, you know, tremendously for what she did, and said, you know, can I give you a bracha? What would you like? She goes, listen, I, Baruch Hashem, have everything, I'm well to do, and I'm okay. She says, fine, I'll give you a bracha anyways. Says, your wealth should continue, you should always have money, and you should be zoiche with your money to build three batei knesset. Okay, two in Chutz Laaretz and one in Eretz Yisrael. That was his bracha, and he left. So sure enough, she was very successful, as the, you know, as he said. And now, she's 50 years later, she's by Rav Chaim Voloshin, and said, listen, Rabbi, so far, two of the three batei knesses were built, like he said, like the bracha was. One was in Voloshin, and another one in Vilna, and I had them built. And there's one more to go in Eretz Yisrael. And I'm, you know, getting old already, so I know you have Ksharim in Eretz Yisrael, the Talmidim of the Gra, whatever. So maybe you can make your shaliach, give you the money, and you can have it arranged for the third shul to be built in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Chaim says, don't be silly. She says, "What do you mean?" She says, "You got a bracha from Shai Gazariah. You saw already two of the three already Mitzkayim what he said, right? So why shouldn't you just build a third shul and that's it? Lafech, you got a bracha. Just hold on and wait and see what happens. You know, you can live longer that way because the bracha's got a Mitzkayim. If I can build it now, it's a convenient. So at least if just hang there, hang in there, and Bezrat Hashem, don't finish off right now. You know, chaval." So she says, okay. So she just left it, and sure enough, she lived to be very old. She married a Eretz Yisrael, and she built the third shul here in Eretz Yisrael. So says that the goyim, you know, so too they say, you know, ayena elokeihem, says, where is your God? The goyim say to us, you know, they see these bad things, we say, oh, hang in there. You know, Kosh Baruch Hu makes a promise, Shai Gazariah makes a promise, it comes through. Shem promises everything's going to be okay. So we tell the goyim, where's our God? We said, don't worry, kol asher chafetz asa, whatever Hashem wants, he does, and he'll do, and we just hang in there and you'll see. Okay. Says that he brings us Maisa. There was once a dayan that he decided, you know, he wanted to make some extra money on the side, so he wanted to take a bribe, shochan. So what did he do? He didn't want to do it directly, you know. He said, "What do with the shinui?" So what was the idea? He used to leave a pair of shoes in the hallway before he entered the base. Then he used to leave a pair of shoes over there. And he would come in with, and change his shoes there and put the shoes on there in the hallway. And what's significant of these shoes? These shoes that people knew that if they wanted to have a din, they would put money in a shoe. Okay, and everybody knew the right shoe was the Toveya and the left shoe was the Nitba. Okay, and then he would put on the shoes and he'd feel which shoe has more money in it. You know, which is tighter, you know, the one that it's tighter, you know, they gave more money, but he'd give the din, you know, in his favor and whatnot. So anyway, so once he comes into the hall, switches his shoes, punches, put his, you know, his right foot in, oh, it's like stuffed. How much stuffed? You know, how, oh, Carly in his foot in, pushing, oh, he gets in. And the left one went in straight, you know. He goes, oh, okay, so I know who's going to win this case, you know. He comes in, he says, yeah, whatever, and sure enough, he gives, he rules in favor of the Tovea, whatever, and that was the end of that. So then he comes back out into his room, whatever, closes the door, takes off that shoe, and he's killing him, you know, because it's so tight, whatever, and he empties it out, and he sees it's just plain paper. So he says, ah, oh, these Ramaim, these tricksters, you can't trust people these days. You know, look at him, he's stoned with paper, can't trust him, oh, I'm a bunch of gangsters, whatever. So he says, here's a guy, he's taking shochad, he himself's a gangster, you know, what? He doesn't see his own move, he sees the other moves, oh, they're the gangsters, they're filling with what you're doing is okay. So he says, so too, that with the goyim. Right, they say to us, "Oh, look at your God." And, meanwhile, we look at where's your God? Where's your God? You know, as it says, they're a bunch of idols. They can't see. They can't do. They can't do nothing. And they're saying, "Where's?" They're saying, "Where's your God?" That's what they're telling. Where's our God? Where's your God? Same thing. He says that once he had an opportunity to speak to a Chiloni scientist, and he says that he said with Gaiva, he says, "I only believe in things that I could see." Kilo, as if to say that, you know, he doesn't believe in God. Because I know what you see, believe. I don't believe in things that I don't see. So he said. So Yaakov asked him. He says, "How old are you?" He says, "I'm 50." Why? So he says, "Interesting." He says, "Maybe there's a difference between the males and females." So the guy's like, "What are you talking about? Hold on, my males and females. What are you getting at?" He says, "I'll tell you." He says, "When I was back in Russia," he says, "I remember that in school, and the supervisor of the school came in one day into the class, and he was with the principal and the teacher. So the teacher wanted to impress us, you know, and he said to the to all the children, he said, "Do you see, children, do you see the supervisor here?" So the kids looked, said, "Yeah." So he says, "Oh, that's a sign that he exists. You can see him." He says, "Do you see over here the principal?" So the kid said, "Yeah." He says, "Okay, it means he exists." He says, "Do you see me?" The kid said, "Yeah." So it's a sign that I exist. "Do you see the door?" "Yes." It's fine. So he went through this whole thing. Finally, at the end, he says, "Now, kids, do you see God?" So they said, "No." So, sign that, you know. So all of a sudden, the girl gets up, 8-year-old girl, and says to everybody, "Do you see the supervisor? Do you see the teacher? Do you see the principal?" And they said, "Yeah, we see them." And then she said, "Do you see their seichel?" "No." "Sign it doesn't exist." So he says to them, "Listen, that this is an 8-year-old girl, and you're 50 years old." He says, "I don't know, maybe it's a difference between boys and girls." I don't know, but, you know, get with it. Okay. He says that... the pasuk of Elokeinu b'shamayim kol asher chafetz asa says that I have a number of acquaintances and different peoples, etc. And once I there's this a communist, okay, and I knew him from years ago, a big communist, and then all of a sudden I see him with a kippah on his head, and I was like, "Wow, what happened? You know, what made you do tshuva?" So he says, "I'll tell you." He says, "We were on the kibbutz, and we were watching the television together, a group of us, and we see the film of how the Russians sent this rocket ship onto the moon, and we see you see the door open, and this like tractor comes like out onto the moon with a shovel, starts digging up the stones and bringing it in or whatever." And everyone's like, "Wow, amazing." So I asked, I said, "Wait a second." I says, who's controlling all of this? I mean, there's nobody there. It's just the thing, and this tractor comes out, and there's no person there. Who's controlling? Who's controlling Ravi? Who's doing this? So he said, "Oh, it's the Russian technology. They're in Russia. They're controlling what's going on the moon." So I said, "Wow, this is unbelievable." So he says, the religious people are constantly claiming themselves. And saying that God in Shemayim is controlling what's going down here. You know, I said, "How could that be? Hashem's control what's going on." I said, "Now we see it, right? In Russia, control what's going on in the moon, so Hashem can control what's going down here." So he said, that's what did it for me. I came from after that. Okay, say the pasuk Gatzabeim Kesev Azav Maase Yedei Adam Yisrael Batach Bashem. It says they have idols of gold and silver, etc. And Yisrael, so we say, trust in Hashem. He says, what's the connection between these two of the idols thing and that we're to trust in Hashem? So he brings the yisod that he said I heard from Reb Dessler, and that's as follows. It says by Makas Bachoros, says that Paro got up by Yakam Paro Laila. Got up at night. So Rashi comments from his bed. So, what's this thing I'm trying to tell him? He got up from his bed. So he says this is very significant. Why? Because he says, how could it be that Paro, after 9 makas, this is the last makas, 9 makas, exactly what Moshe said was going to happen, 9 times happened. And here again, he said, "I'm gonna, Hashem's gonna come, and he's gonna destroy me before Paro, Yoshev al Kiso from the before Paro, whatever." Okay, how could Paro go to sleep? Paro went to sleep. He had to got up from his bed. How could he go to sleep knowing that 9 out of 9 Moshe, now 10, the Bechor's gonna die? And he's like, "Okay, who cares? Go to sleep." How can you be such a kofar and seeing all this and go to sleep and peacefully go to sleep? He said, the answer is that there's a yisod. That is, Zelu Magzeh Asa Elokim. The Kosh Baruch Hu, in this world, he always has to keep a balance. He said the reason is for Bechira, so people can have free choice. So there always has to be a balance between the good and the bad. right? There has to be equal balance, because they're the good was so, or the bad was so thing, and then it's clear. So Hashem always to keep a balance. That's why when there is a time of nevuah in the world, then there was also a time of you know, black magic and all these things that we don't have today. Because there had to be a balance. If it was a nevuah so clear, then there's no tomb sign in the tomb. It's obvious. So there always has to be a balance. So goes that for throughout history. So nowadays we don't have nevuahs. Now we don't have these things either. Anyways, so it says by Avram Avinu that Hashem told him to go shech the sun, kedus yitzchak, right? And what does it say in the pasuk? Vayashkem Avraham baboker. Right, he got up and he saddled up his donkey, whatever, and he went to shech the sun. How can he go to sleep? What kind of a father can go to sleep knowing he has to get up and shech the sun? But he said, no, Hashem said, calm, no problem, is what Hashem wants, I'll do it calmly. So, zelu mazeh, asalukim. Since for the good, the Avraham Avinu was able to go to sleep knowing that he has to shech the sun because Hashem said, so the goyim Paro was able to go to sleep with kfira. It says Avraham was able to go to sleep with Amunah. Because Zelu was there, so look. So he said that, so that's the connection of Pasuk. Atzabayim, Kesavazah, Masayed, Ehano. Right? And how could, but since they can believe in the shtus of the idols, whatever, so that's a sign that likewise we can have Bitachon and Hashem to counter that on as low levels they are and they're believing in their idols, and they're just, they believe it. You know why? They believe it. So if they can believe in that, we can believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He says a great vor. He says this happened, he said, in the summer of Tafshin Mem Zayin. That he said I had to speak somewhere in Tel Aviv and Shul, whatever. So I was, I took a train, whatever. So I got there and I was like, walking, going towards where I was going to. All of a sudden, a guy passes by in his car, like a Haredi looking guy with a beard or whatever. And he screams out and he says to me, Zelu Mazeh Asa Elokim. This is Michigan. Like, who's he screaming out of the window? Like, who is this? What is this guy? You know, weirdo or something. I don't know. But then he screams out at me again. He says, "I'll never forget it. You saved my life." She says, "Okay, now this is getting interesting already." You know, so he goes up to the guy, looks in the window, and he says, "Ah, Barrel, long time no see. What happened?" So you remember that. Many years ago, he says, he was in a refugee camp. This was right after the war, so he came from Siberia, whatever. So with all the refugees from the camps, whatever, in Berlin. So he says, we're in the camp, and this Barrel, right, at the time, he came from an illustrious Hasidic home, whatever, and everything was wiped out. He lost his whole family, and all his possessions, everything. He just was left with some, ripped clothing, and on his back, and that was it. He had nothing. So he turned to Yaakov, who was there also, and he says, how can we continue? How can we go on living? Look at this. Now we lost everything. How can we continue? So he said, I told him, I said, listen to this Chazal. So it says it's known that Sancheriv, he came and he conquered the world. And he involved the whole world, and he sent them to Galus, including to Asura, Sarasa Shvatim, he was a goal of them. And the only stronghold he had yet to conquer was Yerushalayim. Everything else he conquered. So he got his men together, 2 million chayalim, with officers, 185,000 officers, and they said, "That's it. We're going, and I'm gonna get that to Yerushalayim." So they were making their way to Yerushalayim, and on the way he stopped by his Avodah Zarah house, and he promised that if he'll be successful in conquering Yerushalayim, he'll offer up his two sons to the Avodah Zarah. And then off he went to Yerushalayim. And as the story goes in the Nach, that what happened, they camped out there at Yerushalayim, and a malach came and destroyed the whole camp, all the soldiers, everybody. And so what does it say? Yashkimu baboker v'nei kulam pigarim meitim. It says in the Malachim Beis, right, that they woke up in the morning and everybody was dead. So who woke up? Everybody was dead, so who woke up? So the answer is, Hashem left Sennacherib alive, his two sons and his two servants. It's five people. And to see, you know, to witness what happened. So what happened? Then he went to the back to the base of Avodah Zarah, and he said, I lost everything, right? All my camels, everything destroyed. I lost everything. But listen, I promised anyways my two sons, I'm going to still going to offer my two sons. Offer them up for a sacrifice. So the sons heard this and said, what? No way. Over our dead bodies, they say. And they killed him. Killed the father. Anyways, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So he said this was at the, you know, he's speaking to Beryl. He told him this at the refugee camp. He said, so, you know, he said, yo, what it was going to be? We lost everything. So he said, listen, Zeilu Mazeh Asalokim. Hashem always keeps the balance. So you see that Sennacherib, right, he lost everything. And what? But he still put his hope in Avodah Zarah. So, oh, I'm still going to have faith. I'm going to, you know, offer up my sons or whatever. He lost everything. But still, he had faith in his Avodah Zarah. So if he can have faith in his Avodah Zarah, so we can have faith in Hashem, even though we lost everything. He says, so Beryl, we have the Shem's with us, and we are with him, and we can do it. If Sennacherib could do it for the bad, we can do it for the good. So this was his burial. He never forgot this. That gave him chizuk, and he became remain a firm person. And so children, he says, and grandchildren all go in the way of the Torah. That's why he said to him, you know, he screamed out. He said, "You, I'll never forget. You saved my life." It's a cute little maisa with the Rabbi Yonos and Eibeshitz. So he's saying, "Hallo Pelem Lo Yedaber." He says once Yonos was walking with the king, and they passed by the certain idol of Avodah Zarah. So the king said, "It's befitting that the Rav of the Jews should say something to the say a few words to the idol." So Rabbi Yonos says, "Listen, I'm the Chacham of the Jews. Okay, and in our books it says that a Chacham doesn't speak in front of somebody who's greater than him. Okay? So this idol, you know, okay, he's greater than me, so let him speak first and then I'll answer." So. Okay. Yeah. So once on the Pasuk Yevarech Yirei Hashem Haktani Mimagdoli. So it says once there was a Yid lived in Radin, and he was going on a business trip to Brisk. So he went to the Chavetz Chaim to ask for bracha before he left. So the Chavetz Chaim said, "Yeah, no problem, but you know, if you're going already to Brisk, maybe you can do me a favor. Can you go into the Rav Chaim in Brisk and ask, send him my regards, send him my best, yeah, you know." So he said, "Bezrat Hashem, you know, no problem." So the guy went to Brisk. And he came back, and the Chafetz Chaim didn't see him again. He thought he'd come back to tell him, you know, how everything went, whatever, and tell him how, you know, met with the Brisker Rav, but he didn't say anything. So as it happened, he bumped into the guy. Chafetz Chaim bumped into him, and he says, "Oh, what happened? You didn't go?" He goes, "Yeah, I went. Did you get into the Rav?" He says, "Yeah, I got into the Rav." So nu, did you give him drishat shalom, you know, regards? He says, "Yeah." So he said, "What did he say?" He says, "Oh, that's like kind of why I didn't want to act to you. I didn't want to tell you what he said, you know, lo naimli." So the Chavetz Chaim, "No, tell me, I want to hear. What did the Brisker Rav say?" He said, it's uncomfortable." He goes, "No, tell me." He says, I couldn't believe it. You know, I want to tell him, I told him, you know, regards. And what did he send back? He says that I should tell you, drishat shalom, regards to all those that are chaserei bayit beradin, all those that are homeless in Radin. I should send drishat shalom to all those that are homeless in Radin." It's almost like a klala right there. It should be homeless in Radin, and I thought, I don't want. And I'm not even going to tell you what he said about you. You know, so I said, no, tell me what he said. No, I said, forget, I can't tell you that. Forget it. No, tell me. I want to hear what he said about me. I said, okay, listen, if you want, I'll tell you. But he told me that, and concerning your Rav, you know, the Chafetz Chaim, the Brisker Rav said, he said, Bezrat Hashem, he should run barefoot with stones on his shoulders. So this was, in those days, a very big challah, right? Because who did used to do it? So people that were sent out to work, you know, like slave labor. They had to walk around without shoes and carry stones to pave the roads or whatever. So he said, that's what he said about you, you know. And so Chafetz Chaim said, said there, everything's fine, good. And I go, what do you mean? What are you, the challahs? He goes, not challahs. He said, you don't understand what he said. I said, obviously not. Can you please explain it to me? So Chavi says, I'll tell you. First of all, but he said that I gave a bracha to the homeless in Radin. He was referring to what we say in Hala. Right, what do we say? Yivarech has base Israel. Mentioned about the house of Israel. Yivarech has base Aharon, the house of Aharon. But then we say Yivarech Yirei Hashem. It doesn't say base Yirei Hashem. Doesn't mention a house. So what he was saying is that he gave a bracha. He said, regards to all those that are homeless, means they don't have a house, meaning the Yirei Hashem of Ranan. Like the Yirei Hashem, is not mentioned the house. So the bracha to the Yirei Hashem in Ranan, those that don't have a house. And what about what he said about me? He says, I'll tell you what he said about me. What, this barefoot, the stone? He said, Brisker is a Levi. He says, I'm a Kohen. He was giving a bracha that the Gula should come soon. And since I'm a Kohen, that I should be the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol, he has to do the avoda without shoes on, barefoot. So he gave bracha that I should not be barefoot and wear the shmona and begani. What does he wear around his neck? The choshen with the stones in it. So I should go barefoot with the stones around my neck. So that's what that's what his bracha gave me. What's wrong with that? It's beautiful. Okay. Says Alson Halal Tzara v'yagunem so v'shem Hashem Ekra. Even when times are bad, call out to Hashem. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Beis, that after Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were saved from the furnace, and Yechezkel brought back to life the dead people and Bikastura, so it said that says the Gemara that Nebuchadnezzar began to praise Hashem. And if it were not, that an angel would have come and smack him on his mouth, he would give more praise than David HaMelech. So the question is asked, we're supposed to have free will over here. So it's okay, so he wanted to give praises to Hashem. Let him give praise to Hashem. Why was he stopped? Stop. No, if he would have given more than... Okay, so if he wanted to give praise to Hashem, so let him give praise to Hashem. Why was he stopped? So the Kotzker Rebbe answers, he says, nobody stopped him. He didn't say he was stopped. Otherwise he would have said that the until the Malach came and closed up his mouth or something. He didn't say that. What did it say? Until he had smacked him on his mouth. Meaning what? He says that David HaMelech, he praised Hashem. In good times, we also praise Hashem when there is bad times. Right? It says, Kos Yeshua's Esa, V'Shem Hashem Ekra. And also, Tzara V'Yagon Emtza, V'Shem Hashem. Even when it's Tzara V'Yagon, when things are bad, still, V'Shem Hashem Ekra, I still call to Hashem. So David HaMelech, not only when things are good, it's easy to praise Hashem when things are good, but even when things are bad, he praises Hashem. She says, also we say in the Gemara says, Abrachos, Chesed u'mishpat ashira, l'cha Hashem, mazamera, im chesed ashira, v'mishpat ashira. I'll sing to Hashem, when it's chesed or mishpat, no matter what, I'm always, that's David HaMelech. Nemela said, but Nebuchadnezzar, right, yeah, he was singing to Hashem, you know, praises, but what? That's not because he had it good. Things were going good for him. So let's see what happens when he gets smacked on the mouth. Is he still going to continue? He said, no. He says he would have continued praising if it wasn't for any guests. As soon as he got smacked on the mouth, oh, bad, that's it, I'm not praising anymore. That's the difference between David HaMelech and Nebuchadnezzar. Let's say he stopped him. He just smacked him. See if he's going to be like David and praise Hashem even when things aren't good. And in which he didn't. So in this topic of Saras, says that the Stipler told me once that Ein adam yachol livroach me'atzmo. He says a person can't run away from himself. What does that mean? He says a mashal. He says a woman. Imagine a woman's having labor pains, tremendous pains, right? So she says, it says mishana makom mishana mazel. So take me to another room, and maybe there I won't be in pain. That's ridiculous. You're going to go to another room. You're not going to have pain. You can't run away. The pain. You can't run away. See, the same similarly says somebody came to the stipler and complained about a neighbor. His neighbor's not a good neighbor, bothering him all this. So he wanted to ask the advice from the stipler. Maybe he should move. So he said no. He says don't move. He says just daven. Daven to Hashem. So his family couldn't take it anymore, and they said no, we can't. They didn't listen. They just and they moved. They moved to another place. Meanwhile, little did they know, but in the place where they went, the neighbors were even worse. They were seven times worse than they were in the first place. Their mind was even more miserable. So they realized that at least they thought that it was because of the kapeda of the stipler, because they didn't listen to him, and as a result, they're getting punished. So they went back to the stipler and they said, we want to apologize, probably because of your kapeda. So what happened? We didn't listen to you, and then we got it worse over our heads. He says, no, listen, I didn't give you psak. I told you an eitzah to daven, right? Because it's pasha. He says the tzaras don't come by themselves, right? They come from Hashem, right? And therefore, he says, you have to know, and where they come from, and approach Hashem. That's how you can get rid of them. But when Hashem sees that you don't come to Him, and you say, go here, go here, Hashem says, fine, you want to take care of it yourself, take care of it yourself. Because that is what happens, right? You have to go to Hashem, you dove into Hashem, and He'll take care of it. Don't you ignore Hashem and do things you're on your own, and Hashem says, fine, take care of it yourself. Okay, so one last story, very cute story. It says that in the Vardak, where he's a shiva, where he was from, learning, so he said that they used to work on their midos, but not just them, they had a special program, and every month they took a different mida, and everybody's supposed to really actively think of ways to work on that mida. One month it was the on cheshvin, it was breaking a person's ego and to help other people. And the next month on kislev, he says it was to not to run after extras in life and to work on the, anyway. So in Adar was the mida of amitzut, courage. To be courageous, to be strong, like as kanamer, you have to be strong and courageous to do the ratzon Hashem. So they worked on themselves to build their courage. So different bachrim had different ideas what to do, to build work on their courage. So one of them went to like a communist platform, a meeting. He wandered in there, and then all of a sudden he jumps on stage and he says, "This is Führer," which is he's taking your life into your own hands, But he did it to build up his courage. And one other bachur would go into the market, and everybody's running, buying and selling, and he would, get everybody's attention. Says, "This is Olam Hazeh. What are you running around? Giving the mussar or whatever." Also, anyway. So everybody had their own way of working on it. So he said, I had a plan what to do to work on my courage. So it was a crazy idea. I don't know if I think of such a crazy idea, but this is what I had as my idea. What it was my idea. So I decided to go to the most scariest place I can think of. What is that? It says to go to the basic forest at night. In the middle of the night, I go to the basic forest, very, scary, eerie, And not only that, which itself is a scary thing, but it's known that the neshamas of the meisim, that at nighttime they go and they toivel in the mikvah where they do the taharas, they toivel the dead bodies before they bury them. The mikvah of taharas, the neshamas are toivel in this mikvah at the night. So I'm gonna go. I'm gonna toivel in that mikvah. In the middle of the night, I'm going to go in, I get a toy, that's real courage, So he says, I was crazy, he says, but I did that, even though it's not recommended, there's mezikim there, and then the neshamas, and they don't want you to, break in on their territory, But I went, and I got my courage up, I went in the middle of the night to the basic forest, you know, it was dark and eerie, whatever. And I found my way to the Cheder Taharas, you know, where they make the Taharas. And I opened up the door, you know, go in, wander in, and I go up to the mikvah, and I see the water's like, you know, it's like moving. And I'm saying, oh my gosh, you know, it looks like the neshamas are really in there, you know. He says, but I got to do this, got to make courage up, and I, you know, I got undressed, and I started like walking down the steps, you know. And the freezing cold water, you know. So I said, I gotta do this. I gotta do this. I'm about to. I'm going down steps. It's freezing cold, and all of a sudden, I take a next step, and what do I step on? A skull. I got such a fright. I said, oh my gosh, the right mom is here. You know, and I was like, couldn't, I just jumped out and I ran and I got dressed. I took off, got out of there. I was like white like a sheet, like I stepped on a skull, you know, white toes. Oh my gosh. So I came back to yeshiva, and of course I didn't tell anybody the crazy thing that I did. You know, I was like, I just couldn't believe I did such a thing, and I was like, what? I couldn't learn, I couldn't daven, I was beside myself. So I went to the Chadar Rachel. So I wandered into the Chadar Rachel, and I see yeshivas. So I walk into the Chadar Rachel, and I see another bachur there, and I come up to him, and I say to him, you don't look good. You look all like white like a sheet. He goes, yeah, you also don't look so good yourself. So I said to him, okay, but what's wrong? Why do you look like this? So he said, listen, you know, we're working this month on courage. So he said to this guy, told Yankov, he says, we're on courage, so I did something really crazy last night. He says, what did you do? He says, yeah, you're not going to believe me. He says, no, what did you do? He says, I went last night, in the middle of the night, to the basic forest, and I wandered in there, and I went to the mikvah in the Chadar Tahara, and I toiled in the mikvah, and the thing, you know, to build my courage. And I was under the water, and all of a sudden, I'm about to get up, and I feel someone stepping on my head. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, the neshama is stepping on my head. And I got so sort of afraid or whatever, and I got, oh, whatever. So, Yankov said, So he said, now he understood. So he learned, he said, a lesson in Musar over here. What was that? He says, you know, I was so scared. Oh, why? Because I didn't dream for a minute that maybe there's somebody else that had my idea of what to do. I thought, oh, nobody's going to think of this great idea of how to be courageous, going to the you know, the basic forest. I mean, nobody's going to have this idea. Therefore, when I stepped on a skull, I didn't think it would be a person because nobody has my idea. I mean, why'd you think that maybe there's a guy under there having to do the same thing as you, which or what? Right? So he said, here I was trying to work on my courage, and I said, I got a lesson in another. Okay.